This is a 5 train. The next stop is Wall Street.
Herzlich willkommen zu Wall Street Weekly, dem Börsenpodcast aus New York. Ich bin Sophie Schimanski, schön, dass Sie reingeklickt haben. Heute blicken wir nach Nebraska und Minnesota und zu den Viehbauern. Die werden seit einigen Wochen ihre schlachtreifen Tiere nicht mehr los, weil Lebensmittelkonzerne wie Tyson Foods und Smithfield ihre Fleischverarbeitungsbetriebe schließen mussten. Sie sind regelrechte Brutstätten des Coronavirus geworden. Das stellt Farmer und Rancher nicht nur vor große finanzielle Probleme. Sie wissen wortwörtlich nicht mehr, wohin mit den Tieren. Ich habe mit Rinderzüchter Trent Luce aus Nebraska und Schweinebauer Mike Patterson aus Minnesota gesprochen. Sie fürchten um ihre Existenz, erzählen sie mir, und berichten, was in der Branche schon lange im Argen liegt. Patterson ist der Regierung dankbar für Subventionen, aber das staatliche Geld reiche kaum, sagt er. Trent Luce hingegen glaubt, die Subventionen sind nicht der richtige Ansatz. Und zum Schluss sprechen wir über eine Börsenweisheit speziell für diesen Monat. So hört es sich um Mitternacht an in Mike Pattersons Schweinestall in Canyon, Minnesota. Es war ein langer Tag, für Mike ebenso wie für die Schweine. Sie wiegen inzwischen rund 130 Kilo. Mit 3000 ausgewachsenen Schweinen wird es eng im Stall. Und am 19. Mai werden 3000 neue Ferkel geliefert. Eigentlich hätte Mike die älteren Schweine längst auf Trucks laden und an die Verarbeitungsanlage Sioux Falls in South Dakota ausliefern müssen. Betreiber Smithfield aber hat sie Mitte April schließen müssen, weil die Fabrik in South Dakota zum größten Corona-Cluster des Landes geworden war. Mike Patterson.
Right now, I have not sold any pigs, other than some pigs that I've sold locally.
Jetzt steht Mike Patterson vor einer schwierigen Entscheidung. Lässt er zu, dass die Tiere unter beengten Bedingungen untergebracht sind, oder schläfert er gesunde Tiere ein und verliert damit viel Geld?
We realize that the animals are going to be harvested, that they are going to die. But the reason we do what we do is, is to be able to create food for people to eat. That's what drives us. You know, everything we do every day is to keep these animals healthy, to keep them thriving. And seeing that go to waste is something that's very difficult for me to think about.
Wir gehen später noch einmal zurück zu Mike. Ich spreche mit ihm ausführlich darüber, wie die Pandemie seinen Betrieb und seine Familie vor die schwierigste Herausforderung stellt, der sie jemals begegnet sind, finanziell und emotional. So wie Mike Patterson geht es vielen Schweinefarmern auf den 60.000 Schweinefarmen in Nordamerika. Sie trifft es besonders hart, dass die großen Verarbeitungsbetriebe ihnen die Tiere nicht mehr abkaufen, denn Schweine können nur in Ställen gehalten werden. Sie sind zu empfindlich für Weidehaltung, denn sie bekommen leicht Sonnenbrand. Deswegen habe ich wohl auch noch nie Schweine auf der Weide gesehen. Ähnlich ist es mit Geflügel. Rind kann draußen weiden, so ist das Platzproblem weniger ausgeprägt. Trotzdem kommt es auch da bereits zu Engpässen. Trent Luce ist Schweine- und Rinderfarmer in Nebraska. Er verkauft seit Jahren direkt an Kunden und sagt, das habe ihn bislang vor Schlimmerem bewahrt. Trotzdem, er glaubt, dass ein strukturelles Problem in der Industrie dazu führt, dass gerade alles zusammenfällt.
There's only about 3 companies that control 100% of the food at the retail level in terms of who has shelf space, who doesn't have shelf space, who can get into a retail outlet. I see the only answer to eliminating the packer monopoly, the retail monopoly, is that the producer find a way to get closer to the consumer's food dollar.
Trent Luce spielt darauf an, dass sich nur wenige Unternehmen den Markt teilen. Smithfield, JBS USA, Tyson Foods und Cargill sind die Schnittstelle zwischen Konsument und Viehfarm. Und dieser Tage ist es ein Nadelöhr. Die Gewerkschaft UFCW vertritt Arbeiter in der Fleischverpackungs- und Lebensmittelindustrie und meldet, dass in den letzten 2 Monaten mindestens 13 Verarbeitungsbetriebe geschlossen wurden. Die Schlachtkapazitäten für Schweinefleisch und Rindfleisch sind dramatisch reduziert.
We have 50% of the US harvest capacity, which is not open, it's not operating. And that means that 200,000 plus pigs a day have no market.
Der Grund für die Schließungen: die Infektionszahlen in den Werken sind gigantisch. Die New York Times hat landesweit mehr als 60 Lebensmittelverarbeitungsbetriebe identifiziert, in denen das Coronavirus ausgebrochen ist. Die Bundeszentrale für die Kontrolle und Prävention von Krankheiten gibt an, dass mindestens 4.900 Arbeiter in der Fleisch- und Geflügelverarbeitung infiziert sind. Die Gewerkschaft UFCW schreibt, Ende April waren 5.000 Arbeiter im Krankenhaus. Mindestens 20 sind gestorben an den Folgen von Covid-19. Was macht die Mitarbeiter so anfällig für das Virus? Die Fließbänder sind eng besetzt, die Tage lang und die Temperaturen in den Hallen sehr niedrig. Im April ist das Werk in Sioux Falls in South Dakota zur größten Corona-Einzelfallquelle in den USA geworden. Deswegen hat es auf Druck der lokalen Regierung schließen müssen. Es sind inzwischen mehr als 1.000 Arbeiter in dem Werk erkrankt. Es ist auch das Werk, das Mike Patterson vorher beliefert hat. Die Fabrik am Ufer des Big Sioux River ist eine der größten Schweineverarbeitungsanlagen in den USA. Bei voller Auslastung werden täglich 19.500 frisch geschlachtete Schweine zu Speck und Hotdogs verarbeitet. Betreiber Smithfield ist der größte Schweinefleischverarbeiter in den USA. Er hat bereits 2 weitere Werke geschlossen. In beiden Betrieben wurden Mitarbeiter positiv auf das Coronavirus getestet. Bei der Konkurrenz sah es nicht anders aus. In Texas liegt das am schnellsten wachsende Cluster nicht in Dallas, Houston oder San Antonio, den am dichtesten besiedelten Gebieten des Bundesstaates. Es liegt hunderte von Meilen nördlich im staubigen Flachland von Moore County mit 20.000 Einwohnern. Dort liegt einer der größten Rindfleischverarbeitungsbetriebe des Landes, in der Mitarbeiter bis zu 5.000 Rinder pro Tag rasieren, zerstückeln und reinigen. Der Betrieb gehört JBS USA, einer Tochtergesellschaft des größten Fleischverarbeitungsunternehmens der Welt, das seinen Sitz in São Paulo, Brasilien hat. Nach Angaben des Gesundheitsministeriums ist die Infektionsrate in dem Ort 10-mal so hoch wie die in den größten Städten des Bundesstaates. Auch Konkurrent Tyson Foods musste seine größte Schweinefleischfabrik in Waterloo, Iowa, im April schließen. In einem ihrer Schweinefleischverarbeitungsbetriebe in Idaho testeten Anfang Mai noch 40%, 900 Mitarbeiter positiv. Und da waren andere Betriebe bereits geschlossen worden. Letzten Montag warnten sie, dass weitere Schließungen bevorstehen. Tyson Foods CEO John Tyson schrieb in einer Anzeige in der New York Times, die Nahrungsmittelversorgung sei gefährdet. Hier greift ein Medienbericht das Statement auf.
The food supply chain is breaking. That's the warning in a full-page ad from Tyson Foods, released in the New York Times on Sunday. It comes after one of the country's largest meat processors closed a massive pork processing plant in Iowa because of a coronavirus outbreak. The letter from Tyson's president going on to say, there will be limited supply of our products available in grocery stores until we're able to reopen our facilities that are currently closed.
Für Konsumenten bedeutet das konkret, Kühltheken in den Supermärkten sind wie leer gefickt. Sie werden spärlich wieder befüllt und der Fleischkauf ist dann rationiert, häufig auf 2 Artikel pro Kunde. Währenddessen sind die Ställe der Bauern überfüllt. Mike Patterson.
And I know that there's people out there, I've heard locally here, they're limiting the grocery stores and big box outlets are limiting the number of meat items that people can buy and purchase. It's very difficult to think. We've got perfectly good food here on the farm, but we can't get it to consumers because there's no place to process them and harvest them.
Der finanzielle Schaden, der Ihnen daraus entstehen wird, ist groß. Denn in einigen Wochen nehmen ihn die Verarbeitungsbetriebe die gemästeten Schweine nicht mehr ab, sie sind zu groß zur Verarbeitung geworden. Aber wenn sie die Tiere einschläfern müssen, haben sie nicht nur keinerlei Rendite mit ihrem Investment gemacht. Sie bleiben auch auf den Kosten und der Zeit sitzen, derer es bedarf, die Tiere einzuschläfern und zu entsorgen. Mike Patterson glaubt, viele Farmer werden sich davon finanziell nicht erholen.
Yeah, it's a challenging time and there will be farmers that aren't farming 6 or 8 months from now, that are farming today because of this.
Deswegen fordert er, dass der Kongress Mittel aus dem Indemnity-Programm freigibt. Das staatliche Programm entschädigt Viehbauern, wenn Tiere im Zuge einer Naturkatastrophe oder Seuche sterben. Die Zahlung soll dann helfen, die Kosten für die Wiederauffüllung der Herde zu tragen. Es gilt nicht für Tiere, die eingeschläfert wurden. Der Kongress hat stattdessen ein Hilfspaket verabschiedet mit Direktzahlungen an Landwirte in Höhe von 16 Milliarden US-Dollar. Sie sind pro Betrieb gedeckelt mit einem Gesamtlimit von 250.000 US-Dollar. Das sei nicht genug, sagt Mike Patterson.
Obviously, it's a help. Of those dollars, a very small portion was going to hogs. I believe the numbers were like 1.6 billion going for hogs, and that sounds like a lot. But if you compare that to the size of the industry, and if you look at the payment limitations that they've got per farm, it really a farmer that's even a small commercial sized farmer is not going to have, or they're going to have losses that greatly, greatly outpace the aid.
Rancher Trent Luce sagt, das Geld bringe gar nichts. Er sagt, er wolle die Mitarbeiter in den Verarbeitungsbetrieben zwar sicher und gesund sehen, aber am Ende will er vor allem eines, dass sie wieder arbeiten. Er hat klare Worte für die Regierung.
Quit doling out money. Think of this. That's going to make a difference, because at the end of the day, that will not make one difference whatsoever. We do not need somebody in Atlanta, Georgia, Washington, D.C. dictating what should happen in a pork plant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, or Sioux City. So if the federal government really wants to do something that's going to make a difference, then what they will do is find a way to make sure putting the workers' health and safety first and foremost in these packing plants, to get these packing plants back open. President Trump had put in place an executive order with the Defense Production Act, and that is to say that these plants need to remain open as a means of national security.
Präsident Donald Trump hat genau das getan. Er unterzeichnete einen Beschluss, der Fleischverarbeitungsbetriebe zur kritischen Infrastruktur erklärt. Jetzt dürfen einige der Betriebe wieder öffnen, trotz Gesundheitsbedenken. Laut dem Fachmagazin The Counter sind aktuell 9 Fleischfabriken wieder offen, nachdem sie geschlossen wurden. Auch das Werk in Sioux Falls oder Nordamerikas größtes Corona-Cluster ist seit vergangener Woche wieder mit eingeschränkter Kapazität offen. Doch bis der Stau der Tiere abgebaut ist, dauert es. Aufgrund der Sicherheitsmaßnahmen laufen viele Werke nur auf eingeschränkter Kapazität. Viele Arbeiter weigern sich, auf die Arbeit zu kommen, weil sie sich nicht geschützt fühlen. In einem Werk von JBS USA in Colorado kommen 30% der Angestellten nicht zur Arbeit. Sie beklagen mangelnde Schutzmaßnahmen. Die Smithfield-Schweinefleischfabriken sind zu einem Mikrokosmos geworden, der die sozioökonomischen Unterschiede veranschaulicht, die durch die globale Pandemie aufgedeckt wurden. Während viele Angestellte im ganzen Land von zu Hause aus arbeiten, werden Arbeiter in der Lebensmittelindustrie wie die Angestellten von Smithfield als essentielle Arbeiter angesehen und müssen an vorderster Front bleiben. Der Großteil der Arbeiter sind Immigranten und Flüchtlinge aus afrikanischen und südamerikanischen Ländern. Es drohen neue Infektionswellen und somit weitere Schließungen. Es ist ein moralisches Dilemma. Mitarbeiter in Fleischverarbeitungsbetrieben riskieren ihre Gesundheit und ihr Leben, aber ohne ihren Einsatz wird es Pharma in den Ruin treiben. Sie sind bereits vom chinesisch-amerikanischen Handelsstreit gebeutelt. Trent Luce und seine Frau haben 3 Töchter und wollten ihnen die Farm vererben, bevor die Pandemie das Familienerbe drastisch im Wert reduzierte.
The truth of the matter is that we have never accumulated much wealth at all in the agricultural community. Our wealth has been paying for our farms and our ranches, creating an opportunity for our kids to come back, and so that our 3 girls can be the 7th generation to take care of land and livestock. And when you have something like this, where you're killing animals and finding no consumptive use for them, it will take a mental toll that will take generations to fix in the United States.
Auch Mike Patterson hofft, dass seine 4 Töchter seine Farm einmal übernehmen können. Vorausgesetzt, sein Betrieb hat eine Zukunft. Er ist Schweinebauer in der 4. Generation und ist auf einer Schweinefarm aufgewachsen. Mike Patterson erzählt uns jetzt von seinen Schwierigkeiten, Ängsten und Hoffnungen. Well, first of all, thank you so much for allowing me and in the end my audience this insight into your farm, because I imagine this is a very difficult time, so I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for helping tell what's happening out here.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, tell me a little bit about yourself, please. What do you do and where do you do it, and when did you start doing that?
Yeah, so I guess I started farming, well, really farmed all my life. My parents farmed and raised hogs and crops, so I grew up on a hog farm in Kenyon, Minnesota, south of the cities, Twin Cities, about 1 hour. So grew up here. I live a mile away from where I grew up and raising my family here. So I have been raising hogs on my own for about 23 years, since 1997.
Mm-hmm.
Got a wife and four daughters. Maddie's 21 and Isabel's 18. Julia is 15 and Leia is 6.
Oh, all ages. That sounds like fun.
They're a lot of fun there. That's been one very positive thing about sheltering in place. We've had all of our family here at home, and that's been really enjoyable to have everybody home and spend time with them.
Are you really able to shelter in place? Is that something that you can do with your daily job?
Farmers are pros at sheltering in place. They're on the farm and busy, but some don't go out as much. So
yeah, you raise the hogs. I mean, first of all, maybe how many hogs do you have right now, and then we can talk about it more.
Sure. Yep. So we've got on our farm, we've got about 3,000 head of finishing hogs. So what that means is we take them from about 50 pounds up to finishing weight, about 280 to 290 pounds. So we're also part of a hog cooperative. So we work jointly with about a dozen other families. The co-op has a sow facility, sow farm, where the moms are housed and the babies are born. And they stay on the mom for about 3 weeks. And then they go to another farm that's called a nursery farm. There they stay there for about 7 to 8 weeks. So those facilities, the sow facilities and the nursery facilities, are owned jointly as a group. So we work with about a dozen other farmers. And then the pigs come to my farm. So they all come over the course of about 3 weeks. We'll fill our whole facility. They stay at our farm for about 19 weeks. And then, at the end of that, the last 4 weeks of the finishing period, we're selling pigs to Smithfield, typically. Then we clear out the barns, we wash and sanitize them, then we get a new group of pigs in. So that's kind of how the system works around here.
Oh, okay. So you really get it in cycles. You get groups and then you start all over again. So you have like a big group of pigs that are the same age.
Correct. Yep. So it's called all in, all out production. So they all come in at one time. They grow all, roughly at similar rates, and then we sell them all at the end, and then we clean and sanitize the building, and we start all over again.
Well, now I understand why it's so problematic that we have those bottlenecks and those plants closing, because I'm assuming you're still going to get the pigs.
So we haven't sold any pigs, and I've got new ones coming and scheduled to come to my farm May 19th. So we've got a serious issue with space that we're trying to figure out where we're going to be able to just physically house these animals.
Right. Why is it so difficult with pigs? I don't think we have heard that from cattle or chickens yet. Is there something specific about how you need to handle pigs?
Well, I think there definitely has been some similarities in the poultry industry. With cattle, you can put them out on out on pasture, and you know, you can do some things that are easier to hold cattle. With hogs, the packer wants a very specific product. You know, we're very good at getting a very exacting weight range for those animals. You know, some of the reasons are if those animals get too big, the machinery at the plant and just the processes of taking those hogs and making them into meat becomes more of a challenge as they get too large. So there are discounts, sometimes maybe as much as $50 to $60 per head for hogs that are over, say, 320 pounds. So there's a number of challenges. You know, these hogs haven't been outside. It would be difficult to just throw them out into a pasture with sunburn issues. Could, you know, there's health issues. The systems that we have are in place to be able to house the animals that we've got effectively and humanely. I mean, they've all got space to, you know, lay down and feeder space. And, you know, as they get bigger, they just get more crowded. And so that poses, you know, an animal welfare issue. One thing on our farm, we've been able to sell some pigs locally to local butcher shops, maybe on the order of maybe about 15%, we will maybe be able to get out and sold to local avenues. Actually, I'm going to go this morning after our visit and deliver some pigs to our local butcher shop.
So that helps maybe a little bit.
Right. It'll help with you know, just the physical space of it. But the issue becomes, you know, the pigs that are on my farm, the decision to breed that sow was made 10 or 11 months ago. And even the piglets that are being born today on our sow farm, those moms were bred about 4 months ago. So it's hard to stop. You know, it's hard to stop this process that's been set in motion because it's kind of set up like clockwork that we've got, you know, the pigs go from the sow farm to the nursery farm. There's space designed for them. And then they go from the nursery farm to the finishing farm. They go from the finishing farm to the, you know, to the packing house, and they, from the packing house to consumers. One little bottleneck, we're so efficient at getting food from, you know, the animal here on the farm into the grocery store shelves. We're so efficient at that as a system that one little bottleneck in that and the whole thing just falls apart.
Right. And I mean, it's a huge bottleneck. So I can only imagine how difficult it is. And I'm sorry if this is a difficult question, but I do hear that you're trying to do everything to not have them euthanize. I'm assuming it's a really emotional time, and you're probably looking at the calendar every day, seeing May 19th, I believe, approaching, coming closer, and you got to find a solution or more space.
That's correct. You know, as an industry, the depopulation of barns and euthanasia of perfectly healthy animals is happening. You know, these animals were destined to make food for people. So seeing that go to waste, seeing our effort and our care go to waste is something that's emotionally difficult for me and the other friends that I have in the industry.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. I mean, how long can you go on like this financially and mentally, being in such a difficult situation?
Yeah, that's, I mean, the financial piece is obviously another part of that. You know, we don't want to get a zero value for the animals that we have unless we absolutely have no other choice. So from a financial standpoint, this is this is going to be a big hit for a number of farms and very likely ours included. I don't know exactly. I don't know how we get out of this without potentially depopulating some of these animals. And it's a challenging time, and there will be farmers that aren't farming 6 or 8 months from now that are farming today because of this.
I mean, the government seems to be paying close attention and is subsidizing farms, I believe, with $19 billion. Does that help in any kind of way?
For a good-sized farm right now with the payment limitations, it would pay for maybe a few hours worth of expenses.
But I want to talk to you about another measurement by the government, Trump signing the executive order to define meat producers as national security so that the plants are being reopened. Do you consider that a good thing? I mean, from what you're telling me, being able to sell those hogs and having them processed would actually help a lot.
Definitely. So, yeah, we're definitely supportive of the executive order that the President Trump had signed. In reality, it's the plants still are working on ways to get up and running. And ultimately, we need the plants to be up and running and running safely for the workers that work there. Obviously, we count on those workers every day to turn our product into meat for consumers' tables. So it needs to be safely. We need to get to the point where we can get these plants up and running and operating in order to work through the backlog. So the executive order definitely has helped that. I think the plant that we sell to is not open yet for they opened on Monday, but in a limited fashion. They aren't receiving hogs for harvest at this point. It really is a matter, I think, of national security. We've had people call. Since we have been selling some hogs locally to the local butcher shops, we've been having people call kind of frantic, saying that they are very concerned that they're not going to be able to have the meat that they want to feed their families. And that's difficult for me to hear. So really, there's no way the local processing facilities could handle the volume of the plant that we sell to harvest 20,000 hogs per day. So it's just massive in terms of the size of it. So getting those up and running safely is definitely, that's the solution that we need.
What do you wish or hope for? I mean, obviously other than this virus to die out, what would be your message to maybe the government, to big players like Smithfield, Tyson, to the consumer? What conclusion do you draw out of this? What is the big learning that you had?
Well, my message to consumers would be that, as a pork producer, we take a lot of pride in what we do. And we, we're proud to make food for your tables. We need to be able to do that efficiently and we want to produce that quality product for their tables. From a governmental standpoint, really looking for hopefully some assistance from an indemnity program so that we can keep American farmers farming. I don't think your average consumer wants to be buying their meat from countries outside the U.S. I think they'd like to have U.S. grown and raised beef and pork for their tables. And without some assistance, it's likely that a number of farms will go under. And will we be providing that meat here in the U.S. for those consumers? That's a question. So without some assistance, I I wonder what that will look like going forward. From what can be done standpoint, really, the solution has to be figuring out how to get the plants, the processing plants, up and running and running safely.
And I mean, you guys have been hit hard. I mean, we had the sanctions from China, and now this is happening. So I think even before this happened, it was difficult for many farmers, not only livestock, but also crops of any kind, soybeans, certainly. So it just feels like it has been a really rough time for you guys. And yeah.
Yeah, it has been. And there's ups and downs in agriculture, and we know that. This is the situation we have right now, and the hog industry is really unprecedented. We haven't seen anything like this or faced these kind of challenges. I mean, we've had economic challenges in the past, but the thought of seeing your product and your effort go to waste adds a whole nother layer on top of the financial concern.
Do you think your daughters are gonna be working on the farm as hog farmers one day? Do you think that that would be something that they look forward to and that you look forward to?
That's a good question. Prior to this, my girls, they help out on the farm. They help with the care of animals and loading hogs for harvest. They help with all aspects around the farm. Prior to all this, I had really hoped that that if they wanted a place in the industry, that we would have one for them. Currently, I'm not totally sure that that's the case. I don't know what it's going to look when we get out of this. How much money we'll lose during this period. Basically, everyone's just trying to figure out how long they can hang on. And I hope there's a place for them, my daughters, in the industry if they want it. And but right now there's a lot of uncertainty.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, many people inherited the farms, and it has been going on for generations, and like giving up on that or having the thought of maybe having to give up on that. I really hope for you guys that you'll be fine.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. We've been, we've been farming in this area. My family's been farming for four generations. And I know prior to that, my ancestors were farmers in different areas. So like you said, it is kind of handed down from generation to generation. I grew up with it. So I'm hoping that we can keep things going and my daughters can be involved in agriculture.
Yeah. Mike, really fingers crossed for you guys. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Die erste Maiwoche ist rum. Die Börsenweisheit Sell in May, then Go Away basiert auf der historischen Underperformance einiger Aktien in der sommerlichen Hälfte des Jahres von Mai bis Oktober. Sprich, Anleger, die dieser Strategie folgen, glauben daran, dass sie im Mai verkaufen sollten, um im November wieder einzusteigen. Einige Anleger finden diese Strategie lohnender, als das ganze Jahr über an den Aktienmärkten zu bleiben. Tatsächlich bedeutete warmes Wetter von 1950 bis etwa 2013 eher eine maue Zeit für Aktien. Doch seit 2013 deuten Statistiken darauf hin, dass dieses saisonale Muster möglicherweise nicht mehr der Fall ist. Und gerade zu diesen Zeiten ist alles anders. Der Aktienmarkt steigt jede Woche weiter an, ebenso wie die Zahl der Menschen, die ihren Arbeitsplatz verloren haben. Es gibt einen Disconnect zwischen Main Street und Wall Street, wie selten zuvor. Und es ist extra Vorsicht geboten mit Strategien, die einer Pre-Corona-Phase entsprungen sind. Ich verabschiede mich von Ihnen. Danke fürs Zuhören. Ich hoffe, Sie konnten etwas mitnehmen. Wenn Sie Anregungen, Wünsche oder Feedback haben, schreiben Sie mir einfach eine E-Mail an wallstreetweekly@mediapioneer.com. Wir hören uns nächsten Montag wieder. Ich freue mich auf Sie von Herzen, Ihre Sophie Schimanski.